Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen. Today, though, we are going to be talking exclusively about Pokemon. So, and not just Sword and Shield. We're going to be talking mostly a broad stroke of Pokemon in general, the mainline franchises. So, all the handheld games, Well, they're mostly handheld games. If you want to make an argument, Sword and Shield is still a handheld game. But it is the first one of the mainline that is on the larger Nintendo console, however you want to phrase that. But yeah, so Ian, Ian Shaw is with me. Sorry, this is the weirdest introduction ever. But Ian, you have probably played a lot, probably just as much as Pokemon as I have, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll say a merry couple days before Christmas to you, Richard. Happy Star Wars Day.
Oh yeah, December 19th. We're getting real close to Christmas.
It's a lot of stuff going on. But yes, I have played not to completion, but I have played every single mainline Pokemon game since the beginning.
So, all right.
I have not played all of them to completion. I believe that I did not finish Sun and Moon.
Okay.
And I did not finish Black and White. Those were the two I did not finish for different reasons.
Did you ever play the sequel, Black and White 2?
No, that's the thing. You highly recommended the sequels, and I didn't play them. I might go back and revisit them, because I do believe I have.
I'm going to flip that. I don't remember when I hyped up the sequels, but I would argue now more of Black and White, the originals, are fantastic. Replaying them on a Nuzlocke challenge reminded me how good, not like because of the Nuzlocke challenge, but because of how good, like, the gameplay is on those. Like, they really, there was something about those that I thought was like, man, this is actually a lot better of a game than I gave it credit for the first time through. Black and White 2, I just did not, I thought it was a weird sequel. It was more of like, this could have been a DLC for like the PvP of Black and White. Right. That's how.
So the reason, this is going to sound really shallow, but the reason that I couldn't get through, I bought White. The reason I couldn't get through White, and this is going to sound terrible, that was the Black and White was the first game where they went to animated sprites, where they moved. But
they dabbled in it before, but yeah, this was like Crystal did it before them, but Black and White really went like all in on it at that point.
Well, yeah, but the compensation was that they were heavily pixelated, and I couldn't stand the look of it. I thought they looked terrible. I thought it looked really bad. I would have infinitely preferred static sprites that were more high quality, but when they went to the fully moving sprites but they were lower quality, I thought it looked like absolute ass. Particularly your Pokemon.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the opposing Pokemon, but your Pokemon was close up, and for whatever reason it was very pixelated, and I thought it looked terrible. I don't know. Am I the only one that's ever thought that?
I think it depended on the Pokemon, because certain ones looked way, like Victini or something, like the ones with simpler designs looked way better, but the ones that started getting more and more complex, yeah, I agree with you, they started to kind of look like the DS couldn't handle it. Something like that.
And it's really weird, because I'm not one that usually harps too much on graphic capability and stuff like that, especially with Pokemon games, because they've never been super graphic heavy, especially the earlier ones, but they do have a distinctive look and style, and for whatever reason that one just really rubbed me the wrong way, to the point where I believe I got maybe 6 or 7 gyms in and I just couldn't stand it anymore and I just stopped.
I would say that
it's the weirdest reason that I've ever stopped.
Yeah, I would say that as they evolve, I could see that the pixelated stuff, because their evolutions are the reasons they're getting more complex.
Right.
The pixelation could be the reason, like, pushed you too far. Like, you know what? All my guys are now evolved, and the pixels have ruined their, like, the appeal.
So, yeah. But the long answer to your question, that, yeah, I've played all of them. And you have played all of them as well, right?
Yes, and I have played all of them to completion.
Look at you.
I know.
Proud of you.
Ian, what, what draws you to Pokemon? I'm kind of skipping around our notes here, but I think that this is a better segue. To a Pokemon game, what is the reason that we keep picking these things up, even though we know they're essentially the same kind of a gist of a game story?
Well, I mean, both of us played Pokemon when we were kids. Did you ever play the card game when you were a kid?
Yes. I actually went to a couple of the Pokemon League things in the Toys R Us's.
I never
got my Boulder Badge, though.
I never went to those because I think I started going to the Yu-Gi-Oh! Ones. Before that, I don't think I knew that those existed. Yeah, I think when I did know that they exist, I was a little old for them, and I started playing Yu-Gi-Oh! At that point, and I went to those.
I think I might have been like a year too old for the ones I went to anyway.
Would you say that our generation kind of grew up with a lot of these collectible, not just card games, but like collectible things with hobbies and games like tied in? Pokemon had a strong draw to our generation as a whole, and I think that we've continued to play them because both you and I maintain a strong connection with our childhood interests. It's just they've kind of evolved since then, but I think both of us pretty much, you know, we haven't cast aside all of our interests that we had as kids just because we're adults now. So I mean, a lot of people have gone through in detail what made Pokemon successful and why it continues to be successful, so I won't necessarily go into that. But I will say, personally, from a personal perspective, it's kind of like probably equal parts nostalgia, psychotic completionism, and just easy, fun gameplay that is easy to sort of relax to, decompress, things like that. I find it's probably the same reason that I'm still into Star Wars and I play X-Wing and stuff like that. Like I have a very strong tie to my childhood interests because I believe that I'm still kind of a kid at heart, and I find that stuff relaxing and it centers me. So when a Pokemon game comes out, I'm like, oh yay, this is a thing that I can relax to and enjoy, and it grounds me and recenters me towards that sort of a simpler time. So I think that's, from a broad perspective, that's probably why I still love them. Okay. I don't know if it's the same for you.
I mean, definitely agree with all those things, but the other day I was thinking about it because, you know, we were having this podcast coming up, and I think for me, like, because it's not just Pokemon that does this, that like, ticks this box or scratches this itch for me, but it's the idea of the customizable team and, like, the freedom to do whatever the hell you want. And I get the same feeling from, like, Fire Emblem Heroes, and I get the same feeling from, like, any Fire Emblem game or any monster kind of a collector game. So, like, Monster Rancher or Dragon Warrior Monsters back, like, Game Boy one. And it's this feeling of, you know, I get to plan it out, and I have this little strategy in mind, or I'm trying to cover all my weaknesses and emphasize my strengths at the same time, and while at the same time trying to use my favorite ones and making them a little bit better than they probably have reason to be. So, it, like, Pokemon really just goes all in on that. It just kind of lets, like, I mean, yes, it handholds you like hell through the main story, but, like, once it, like, finally lets you do what you want to do, that feeling of, like, oh man, I want to get these things together, and I want to kind of customize this together, and I want to test it out against maybe a gym replay or something, or I'm going to breed the crap out of this thing and I'll send it and start a new game with this one and see how it does through the game. It's just a lot of fun in my, like, that I get to just plan it out. I don't know.
Would you say that Pokemon was kind of the pioneer of the open world game?
Ooh. Maybe.
Because even from the beginning, you could really, you know, spend as much time as you want in certain areas, farming certain Pokemon, leveling to what you want. I mean, I don't know. I think maybe I'm trying to force a narrative in there, but I think you have a real point that you don't have to win one way.
Right.
You can win pretty much with whatever team you want to put together. It doesn't handhold you by saying, oh, like, you really should have a balanced team with these people in it. It's like, all right, like, if you want to go full psychic team, it's your, you know, it's your game. I hope it works. So,
yeah, it's interesting because I would say yes and no, because the first ones I would think that like the Gen 1 and Gen 2, Red and Blue and Gold and Silver, I think those are way more, it's funny to say this now, because like Pokemon did feel more like an open world, with the only restrictions being like, oh, you need surf to cross the water. But once you got that surf, you got that water. Once you can cut down trees, you're able to move through here. Like the only obstacles were like mechanical obstacles that you just didn't get to yet. It wasn't like somebody standing there and being like, well, you know, my Corviknight is tired, and you know, I just don't want you to walk by this bridge because you know it's tired. It's just like,
it's like, oh, there's these Wooloo are sleeping in the middle of the road. Like, you wouldn't want to disturb a sleeping Wooloo, would you?
I'm like, I don't care. Like, I bet they don't care either.
It's like, I'll roll them down the road; they'll be fine. Yeah.
So, like in the earlier ones, that was the thing. Like, oh, hey, there's a pseudo widow in front of you. But, oh, man, that was a great thing. You didn't know that it was that. You thought it was a tree, and you use cut, and it doesn't work because it's not a tree. It was great. Because
it's rock.
It's rock, and you have to throw water on it.
I still mess that up to this day. I'm like, oh, pseudo widow. Like, you're not. I'm like, oh, you're not a grass type. Ah!
Man, for someone that doesn't like water, though, probably should stop trying to pretend to be a tree. But yeah, that was the thing. Like, I think the earlier games, it had this feeling of an open worldness that other RPGs just didn't really give you as often. Like the thing I think of is like Final Fantasy with occasional. Like, I think the older ones had a little bit more like the overworld open themeness, but they got certain of them got a little bit more narrow, linear, is the better word for it. And then you get a couple open world-ishness to them. But I felt like Pokemon really was, like, gung-ho about, you know, you're kind of moving around the continent a certain direction because, you know, you can't climb mountains. But, like, you could kind of go however way you wanted to. You could use whatever team. Like, everyone's team during the first couple of Pokemon and all these Pokemon games, actually, it's never the same team. It's always like, oh, hey, what did you use? It's like, oh, I used Flygon. So it's like, oh, man, I thought about that, but then I ended up getting, like, a Ralts, and I ended up evolving him to Gardevoir, and it was just like, oh, that's my team. And like, it's kind of cool to compare the notes and stuff, and even in the first one where he only had 150, it's like, oh, I started out with, like, Charmander, and it's like, ah, well, you know, what did you do for grass? Because I started with Bulbasaur, and I was pretty much set, and it's like, oh, I found Tangela underneath Palutown, and it's like, there's a thing underneath Palutown? But, so, like, yeah,
would you say that also the fact that the games were, they were multifaceted, that made them, first of all, they were infinitely replayable. Yes. Second of all, you can play them in a lot of different ways because, beside from the main story, which was there for you to complete, there was the secondary goal of completing the Pokédex, which was like sort of the apex of the game, mm-hmm. that you could do. And then beyond that, there was the optional multiplayer of testing your team against other people's teams,
yep.
which was something you never needed to do, but you could do. And unlike a lot of other multiplayer where it feels kind of tacked on and not fully fleshed out, it was so simple to add on, but had another layer of infinite replayability.
Yes. Yep. I think that added to, like, how you always want to get the next Pokemon game because of those replayability. Always felt like it kind of felt a little bit more fresh each time. And it's not like adding Mega Evolutions or Z moves or whatever kind of new freshness. It was always like, well, we're throwing in new Pokemon and they all have new Pokemon powers now. Or we've added new types of moves that are different, and that means that now you can kind of mix and match your physical sweepers and your special sweepers differently, and you could, like, do some supporting craziness now. It's just, like, a lot of weird layers that you can keep peeling away as you form up your team for, like, multiplayer stuff and whatnot.
Yep.
So, yeah, cool. All right, well, Ian, the most recent game, obviously, is Sword and Shield came out. When is it? When did it come out? Last month?
Yeah, it November. Was at the beginning of November, so yeah, it's been a little over a month now, I think.
Yep, so have you beaten it? Have you completed?
So I have beaten Leon, which, okay. I guess is the beating the first part of the story. I am
sort of
I am currently fighting my way through the Gigantamax Pokemon in the other gyms. You know, okay. They're showing up with the secondary story, I guess you could say.
Yes.
So I have not caught the Shield Pokemon yet. Not because I couldn't, just because I tend to draw this sort of stuff out. I'm kind of like, I'll do a little bit of the story, and then I'll go into the wild area and breed Pokemon or whatever else, and fight raids and things like that. And sort of, I'm sort of trying to get my team to where I want it to be before I start challenging you and Kyoshi and stuff like that.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's fine. I did the same thing a little bit until I kind of ripped the Band-Aid off and realized that, like, this story mode, like, the after Leon stuff is the actual story. It's just, like, this game did a weird thing where it separated it. Like, hard separated the story from your League Challenge thing. And it was very odd that they did it this way.
It's quite odd.
Yeah, it kind of feels more like the Delta episode from Omega Ruby. No, Alpha Sapphire Omega Ruby. Where they had, like, this tacked on Rayquaza and Deoxys, like, quest thing afterwards. Only that actually was, like, a different story. It was a part two. This is 100% what, like, the legendary story. Like, the thing you would have expected, because what's so weird about this game is that it has this, like, legend of the Shield and Sword, like, Pokemon, like, peppered in? Did I say that?
Yeah, right? Peppered in. That's correct.
Sorry, I'm doubting myself with phrases lately. peppered in throughout this, like, game, but it's very, like, oh, don't worry about it. Or, like, a problem occurs, like an explosion, it's just like, hey, you guys go on ahead, let the adults handle this one.
Yeah, like, that's an interesting thing to note, I guess, if we're talking about story, because, like, every other Pokemon game, you're kind of expected to, like, you get confronted by team whatever, and you're in conflict with them as the game progresses through the gyms. This one is more realistic, I would say, because all of the adults treat you like a child, where they're like, oh, you go have fun with your gym challenge and we'll go handle this. I'm like, okay, yes, accurate, but I'm the main character in this game. Shouldn't I be assisting you?
Yes.
It's very odd. I'm not sure whether I like it or not, but the thing is, after you become champion, then people start looking to you. It's like, well, you're the champion. Why don't you go do this? Because you're the best trainer in the world. So, like, all of a sudden people start relying on you, which is a bit more accurate, I suppose. Like, a little more true to life. At first I hated it. Now I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Yeah, so I didn't mind it the first time through it. It's just that, like, I wish there was more stuff to have distracted me with. Like, maybe, like, I wish Team Yell wasn't what it was. Like, I kind of wish, like, I didn't, like, maybe, like, I wish Team Yell wasn't such a joke. Like, almost like a complete joke on all the other teams. And as a result, it felt like they were sort of stand-ins. Like, well, we should have a team here, but we didn't really find room to put a team. I just wish that there was, like, maybe our own, like, it wasn't as world, like, altering, but it's like something to distract us of, like, okay, yeah, and or maybe if our rivals were just such, like, had more presence in there, where, like, our League Challenge legitimately felt like we do need to focus on our League Challenge because Hop, Beedi, and Marnie are kicking our ass lately, and I need to, like, show them up or something. But instead it was very straightforward.
It was. This game was weird. Like, it's, and not in a bad way.
Yeah,
it's,
it was sideways.
I have a lot of mixed feelings towards this game. I'm really enjoying it. I'm still playing it, which is, you know, of course, a good thing. I finished and I intend to finish the story I'm in now. I've gotten further than I did in Sun and Moon, where I notoriously quit, like, six gyms in, I think.
You are probably not the only one.
I legitimately thought that was the last Pokemon game I was going to play after Sun and Moon. But, so, this game has me at odds with myself as to what I think of it, because there's very clearly a lot of love and craft that went into it, but then some parts feel woefully underdeveloped or rushed. So, I really like the aesthetic of it. The British aesthetic, I think, was really well done. It's a gorgeous game. The sprites are well animated. It looks really good. I felt utilized the fact that it's on the Switch pretty well. You know, it's the first one to make that jump to full console over your, you know, sole handheld thing, even though I play the Switch almost exclusively handheld. Yeah. But I would say that part is very well executed. I like what they did with gym battles in that they made it very reminiscent of UK soccer fanaticism, where there are these huge events and like people go to them like they would go to football matches, soccer matches, which I think is cool. I actually like that a lot. And I like how as you win, people, random people throughout the game will comment on, oh man, that's that person who's in the gym challenge. They're really cool and doing really well. Whereas in previous games, a lot of people would be completely indifferent towards the fact that you made it and you were a champion. Like, you know, it wouldn't change dialogue or anything. But like every time you go to a Pokemon Center now, it's like, hey, champ, like, oh, here are your Pokemon for you. It's like, oh, thank you. That's cool. I worked hard. Like, so I felt like that aspect of world building was pretty well done. I liked that. I liked the aesthetic. The wild area, I think, has to be mentioned as the big new feature, right? What did you think of the wild area? Because I feel like I have mixed feelings on it.
I wish there was more of it. The wild area is what I thought 90% of this game was going to be. It felt really awkward leaving the wild area, going into the city, and not having the ability to change my camera angle.
Yeah.
So, like, I just, like...
They still... It's that weird thing with Pokemon games recently, where they still don't... They don't want to do full camera control to the user yet.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Because, yeah, it does juxtapose a little jarringly, where I'm like, why can't I change my camera angle?
It's weird because it gives you this odd camera angle because it's a full-fledged game on the main console now. It gives us this camera angle of like a diagonal down view on some of the routes, and it almost feels like I'll sit there and I'm like trying to turn. I'm like, why can't I turn the camera angle? It looks like I can, and I'm like, oh, that's right, I'm not in the wild area. So I like the wild area. I think it's a little overkill with how much crazy amount of Pokemon there are there. But I think that's because it's the only wild area. And if they had spread it out, it might feel a little bit more... Less congested as it feels right now. But overall, I like it. I think that's a good proof of concept is how it feels to me. Like, I can't wait for the next Pokemon game, and hopefully they put the wild area throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? Like, I feel like if you asked most people, I'd say probably over 50% of their time in the game is spent in the wild area for one reason or another. Like, it was a good decision to have the nursery out there, or one of them anyway.
Yes.
Because it's convenient to be able to pick up eggs and ride around and do raids and stuff. Like, before, it's like, oh, I guess I'm going back and forth on this bridge near the nursery. But now it's like, oh, cool, I picked up an egg. Why don't I go do this raid over here? Oh, the egg hatched. Oh, let me go grab another egg. Like, you know, that's nice. There have been a lot of quality of life improvements in this one.
Yeah.
So I guess they're things where they streamline gameplay a little bit. They also like some certain things that I don't know if existed in Sun and Moon. So if they did, then, you know, I'm sorry, but they will. What is it? They automatically send eggs to the boxes now. You can access. I believe in Sun and Moon you could do this too, but you can access your boxes from wherever, not just from
Sun and Moon, but the Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee.
Okay, yeah. So you can access your box from wherever. You don't need the terminal, which is really nice. What else is there?
Ooh, you know what? No, it's not. You know what? This actually might be the first time we have the box accessed. What Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu had is that the move tutor, the move forgetter, and the name raider are in every Pokemon Center.
Yes, which is also hard skills
to use it.
Doesn't cost anything.
Oh, yeah. God, it's the best. That's my favorite improvement of the game.
Pokemon don't gain levels in the nursery, which I like a lot, because you could really rack up quite a tab, but also no one used the nurseries for experience growth. They used it exclusively for breeding.
Yep.
So I liked that.
I love and hate it, because I like it because it means that when you set a Pokemon in with a certain set of moves, you don't have to worry about those moves being overwritten because it grew a bunch of levels. But I hated it because I tried to do it in my current Nuzlocke run, and I was like, okay, well, I'll have these guys set over here, and that way I have these backup guys being raised, and I'll just move two of the moves back on them. And then I come back, and I'm like, why haven't they gained any levels?
Oh, yeah. I guess that would hurt.
But, I mean, that's a very specific reason. And that is, other than that, nothing else is... I like the nursery changes.
The Pokemon Center and the Pokemart are in the same building, which is nice.
Yes.
So you don't have to look for the Pokemart every time you get into a town.
Yep.
Although
they're all different ones sometimes, and that's still a little annoying. Like, there's no Pokemon supermarket in this game, so you can't find the person who's selling the proteins or the TMs or something. They're all
different. You have to look it up, which is annoying.
Yeah.
So there's that. I would say. But at the same time, there are some things that are underdeveloped. Like, I would say the raids, which ended up... I don't know if they didn't anticipate them being as big of a part of gameplay as they were. But I play a lot of raids, and I feel like the raids are underdeveloped.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential. It's really fun to sort of, one, showcase who you're using to a bunch of three other trainers without having to battle them. Two, showcase your customized appearance of your trainer. That's always a fun one. And then blow the living crap out of a super powered up Pokemon that you probably want to catch as well. And the rewards for them are insanely good.
Very hefty. You can farm a lot. Like the TRs, which I believe are also new.
Yep.
Are a really big deal.
They're cool because it kind of does a throwback to how TMs used to work, where they break. But there are so many cool TR moves that that you would just want to grab. I think it just keeps the replayability of wanting to do a raid because you want to get another TR or whatever.
Right, and I don't want to go too much into the experience reward, because I believe I see on the notes here that we're going to talk later about leveling in this. And so I'll leave that. But I think there's a lot to like, but also a lot... Because one thing I will sort of brush on before we get to that is one of the reasons that they claimed that they didn't include all 800 and whatever Pokemon in this game was they felt that it would be impossible to balance.
I can understand if that's the reason. I don't think it's impossible, but I can understand that's a daunting task.
It is. I would say yes, but I would also argue that the game... If they're talking about balancing in multiplayer, I guess that makes sense. However, if they're talking about it would be really hard to balance gameplay or whatever internally within the game, I would say that balance internally in the single player is fucked and that they need not have worried.
Yep.
So, and we'll get to that a little later. But
So I'm going to be a bit of a wet blanket because I have... Because I agree with pretty much all your pluses about this game, but I have some issues with it. I things that maybe scratch my head, and they're not huge
good.
Issues.
Wet blanket away. I have some issues too, so I'm sure that I'm not begrudging you.
So, first I will add a point of what I love about this game. Can I just talk about that? The music carries this game so hard.
The music is really good.
This is probably one of the best soundtracks I've ever heard in a Pokemon game. Period. That being said, I have an issue with one of them. and it comes with the British setting. So, this might be my stupid American brain, but when I think Britain, I think King Arthur, I think the Navy / the Sea, I think Winston Churchill / whatever Prime Minister is currently doing his thing, and, whatever else comes with those things. Soccer is not the thing I think of. And I think I know hooligans are there. I do know that the pubs and the pub scene of the hooligans, that's a British thing. But the way that they put these soccer hooligans and the gyms and the song that plays in there, it feels Brazilian to me. Like, it feels like it's something from South America. That's the kind of fanaticism I see when these Pokemon games. And it's odd because I'm like, listen, I know that Britain loves their soccer. But that's not the thing anyone thinks of when they first think Britain. Like, it's not as big as some of the other things when you think of the sun never sets in the British Empire.
I mean, I don't know if that's a skewed American perspective or not. That's the thing. Because, like, and I don't, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, because I also didn't think of curry when I thought of Britain.
Yes, I forgot about the curry.
But apparently curry is, like, a big thing in the UK. Like, apparently it's very popular. Curry is, like, a big deal. And I did not know that before I played Pokemon. I was like, what's the deal with curry?
Yeah, that's like it feels like that's a very... Like, it felt like Japan was forcing some sort of, like, their own... like stuff into this.
but apparently, yeah, I've talked to multiple people who say, yeah, like within the last couple decades or whatever, like immigrants brought over curry to Britain and the British love curry. So I guess that's a thing with modern Britain, is that they really, really enjoy curry.
Tea. I would have thought tea and biscuits or something would have been.
And that's the thing. I don't know if we're operating off of stereotypes or not.
Right,
but
right, true.
I kind of give them a benefit of the doubt that maybe they
don't.
That's
why I didn't say bad teeth as listed.
Oh my God.
Now that's a bad stereotype. But yeah, it's not a huge deal. It's just that when we go into these stadiums and they're going nuts, and I do love the idea of these stadiums, like it feels like an event as opposed to just, you know, a personal little battle. Although I do have to wonder, do they like, how do ticket holders get into the stadium? Because I just seem to waltz in there whenever the hell I feel like
it. Oh yeah, they're just waiting there. They just buy a ticket for a whole week and they sit there and do their homework and, you know, stuff like that. And they're just like, oh boy, here comes the gym challenge.
And then one of my friends was like, what if you don't make it through the challenge and like you fail before you get to the gym leader? Do they like, and they send you home and like everyone has to like, sorry, the gym challenger didn't make it.
I guess.
But yeah, it's not a big deal. It's just something that, as I'm sitting there, I go, the music doesn't feel like this is a British thing. This feels like the weird cheering. I almost felt like the kazoos or whatever were about to be whipped out, and we were about to have like
the vuvuzelas.
Yeah, yeah. Because it just didn't. None of the aesthetics felt like it was like. Once I entered the gym, I was like, I am transported to a new country. But no, not something that breaks the game for me. Just made me kind of like, what the hell's going on here? The next thing I had an issue with, this is big. This is the one that did piss me off. Why the hell did they gate catching Pokemon, like, levels? Like, can't catch a certain guy because he's too high of a level? What the hell is this nonsense?
I hated that. I don't know why they did it, because they have a... Well, so here's the thing, and correct me if I'm wrong. Did they have... I don't remember if they had a limit on Pokemon that will obey you.
They do. And it's actually... It's hilarious because... So I'm at Gym 7 in my Nuzlocke right now. So I have 6 badges. And if you look at your trainer card, it says, Pokemon up to level 70 will obey you. But you can only catch level 50.
So it's weird because I'm assuming they did that because they were concerned about the wild area and that people would be able to catch Pokemon far above their level.
Why is that a problem?
I'm assuming that was their and this goes back into balance, because
right.
I think that was their hope to try to artificially balance the game, because the wild area throws all kinds of game balance out the window.
Right.
So I guess that was their band-aid to try and fix that, which I guess I understand. However, it like still balance is still fucked.
Yeah.
And do you just want to talk about this now?
Yeah. Let's just rip the band-aid. We'll just go all Sword and Shield for a little bit here, and then we'll bring ourselves back into the broad again. So balance is fucked because of the raids, and the rewards that we talked about, they are in fact so good that they will break the game. And because of how generous the badges are with how much you can level your Pokemon up, I'm not level 70. 70 is my limit at Gym 7. Like, everyone else is level 40 at this point. I can brute force this game harder than any other game because of what the raids will give you in the extra point share candies.
So they give you, for people who don't know, the raids will give you essentially, before raid candy, or rare candies were the way that you used candy to level if you had to.
Right.
But now they give you essentially candies that contain experience.
Yep.
And they could contain a lot of experience if you get like the large or extra large candy. The extra large candies, I believe, have 30,000 experience pop.
You could get almost like two levels worth of stuff, or multiple levels worth of these like experience points if you give them to like a guy you're raising or whatever.
Yeah, so while it is good if you have beaten the game and you're trying to power level Pokemon that you have caught after the game and you don't want to start from like level one and take forever, it is good in that sense. However, if you're getting these candies before you've beaten the game, it takes all challenge out of the gym battles. I have not whited out in this game yet. Which is unheard of. That's never happened. I've always whited out at least once in past Pokemon games. And it's not because I'm really good and I'm just like, oh, I know how this game is played. It's just because my Pokemon have always been overleveled. And it's not even because I spent a ton of time in the wild area. It's just like, well, I have all this candy, I might as well use it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. And I put it down here because, and you just said it, like, the question was, are Pokemon games getting too easy? Are we just too good at them because, you know, we've played them for years now? No. This is something that, like, it feels that every time they take a step forward in a quality of life improvement, so, like, in X and Y, they gave us extra point share that worked on the entire team, which was wonderful. The problem is they didn't adapt the rest of the game to it. And so you would start to see that your whole team is about 5 levels higher than everyone else's, because you could just keep using Pokemon. You didn't have to shift in Pokemon and worry about them getting fainted. You could just fight the good fight with the strong type advantage. And so then Sun and Moon, they kind of fixed it a little bit, but it still felt like you could power through leveling if you needed to. And in this one, now you've got these candies, and they still haven't adapted the levels to it. And I want to know, what is it going to take for the Pokemon Company / Game Freak to finally implement adaptive leveling, like where the game just keeps up, like forces its own things, like, hey, we're always going to be about 2 levels higher than you on gym battles, like, hey.
Well, and also, so correct me if I'm wrong, I am assuming this because this is how Rare Candies worked, and because I can hear the fanboys answering us like with their noses pushed up, and I'm like, well,
if anime glasses.
If you just use the EXP candy, then you don't get any of the effort values when you level your Pokemon, because effort values are only rewarded through combat.
That's not going to matter when my Pokemon is like 50 stat points ahead of everyone else.
That's the thing. It matters for multiplayer, correct?
Yes.
So I'm assuming that is how it works, because that's how Rare Candies worked in past gens. If you only leveled your Pokemon through Rare Candy, they wouldn't be rewarded with any of the effort values for specific stats. And if you faced off against another Pokemon the same level that had leveled through combat, it would beat you because it had effort values.
Yes, now, here's where you get to throw your book off the table and say...
I've got a way to throw the book off the table, but you go first.
Because even if you got your guy to level 100, you could still get your effort values.
It
doesn't affect the actual leveling. It's like its own little hidden stat behind it or whatever. So, like, and that's why they introduced berries that will, like, eliminate certain stats off of a guy if you, like, went through the game and now you got a bunch of junk stats mixed in there. So, like, hey, I want to prioritize physical attack and speed. You could go in there and be like, get rid of all the special attack effort values, and then you could go back to grinding down into what you need to for your physical attack. Even then, it doesn't matter. Like, yes, you can skip your effort values, but you'll get them back.
Not just that, but, like, the effort values, there's so many ways to do EV training now, like through the Poke Jobs, which will allow you to do it.
Oh, thank God for this.
And then forgetting even that is money in the Pokemon games is no longer an obstacle.
No, it's not.
It's because of the wild area.
Yep.
Because not only can you pick up valuable items just anywhere all over the fucking wild area, there's those two people next to the nursery where you can spend your watts and they dig up treasures for you.
Yep.
Like, I do that every single day. Yep. And I'm just like, I farm those for like 5-10 minutes. I sell all the treasures to the shop for like 200,000 Poke coin. And
is that
then
what it's called? I always got confused on what our currency is.
Assuming it's Poke. And then I'm like, okay, I'll buy I'll buy 20 vitamins for this Pokemon that I'm training up right now, force feed them pharmaceutical enhancements, and then power level them with the candy, which so that now they get their effort values. I'm just like, oh my god, like, this game has just decided, what if we made everything super easy? What if money didn't matter? What if leveling didn't matter? What if effort values were easy to get? I'm just like, Jesus, like, I don't know.
It's so weird because, like, the wild area and all the stuff it gives you, this game 100% has its eyes set on the end game, the post-game stuff. And it makes me wonder if they're thinking that they're going to try to get an esports scene kind of a stuff going on a little bit stronger than they have, because now it's a lot more accessible than it's ever been. But like, it's at the cost of the main game, which, like, it feels like they just punted. And it's odd, and it drives me back into the idea that why gate certain things? Like, you can't catch the wandering Tyranitar because he's too high a level to you. If, like, I could break the game with everything else you didn't gate to me. Like, what's the point of gating this one thing now? Like, what, you think this Tyranitar is gonna stop me from, like, beating the little snot out of your pathetic excuse of gyms? No, like, my guys are already, like, way higher.
Yeah, and it also kind of makes their argument that the game is hard to balance not ring true.
Yes.
Because balance is pretty much fucked. So, if you must only be talking about multiplayer balance, and we haven't even talked about Gigantamaxing.
Yep.
their new mechanic.
Yeah. What's your feeling on Gigantamaxing? Oh my god. What's the other one? Dynamaxing. Especially in comparison to the Z moves and the Mega evolutions.
My first thought is that it's overly simplified. I preferred the Mega Evolutions at first blush. When I saw the trailer for it and everything, it was kind of offensive to me to the point where I was like very, very down on it. But now, after playing the game, I don't hate it. I think that it has a purpose for raids, particularly.
Yes.
The raid mechanic, I think it serves that purpose well, just like from a like sort of a conceivable standpoint. It's like, oh well, how do we do a 4-on-1 raid if it's just a regular Pokemon or even a mega evolved Pokemon? It's like, well, why don't we just make it huge for some reason, and then it could tank a bunch of attacks, and then you can have a raid mechanic. And I was like, all right, I guess that makes sense. But from a perspective of 1-on-1 battling, particularly multiplayer battling, I don't think that I don't think it has a place in that. Whereas the Mega Evolutions, I thought there was strategic value to how that plays out in 1-on-1 battles, and you had to pick your spot, and different Mega Evolved Pokemon had different abilities or different typing, which I thought was interesting. The Dynamaxed Pokemon are just, they're just chunky. They're just chunkier versions. And there's not a lot of nuance to it, except they're bigger and they can tank more hits. That's it. So from a multiplayer 1-on-1 perspective, like me versus you, I have no purpose. I have no desire for that to have a place in standard multiplayer.
Well, then you would agree with Smoggin's rules, because they've outright banned Dynamaxing and Gigantamaxing.
Agree with that. I agree with that stance. I think it's great for raids. I think that's probably the only place that it should have a role. I get why it exists in that format.
Yeah, I think if Gigantamaxing felt more like what Mega Evolutions were, then I'd probably be more on board, because in my opinion, Mega Evolutions saved like a couple Pokemon's ass from mediocrity, like Mawile. Fuck Mawile, he's a shitty Pokemon. But when you Mega Evolve him, holy crap, that guy dishes out damage, and it's all of a sudden you can build a whole strategy around that guy. Like Kangaskhan does nothing, but like if Mega Kangaskhan, well then all of a sudden it hits twice with one half, like it doesn't matter what move it is, it's going to hit twice with the other one being half damage. That's two earthquakes. That's insane. So like, that's not what you get with Gigantamaxing. You get basically a giant version of Pokemon that kind of is like a watered-down version of Mega Evolution, and then a bunch of Z moves that are fine. They're repeatable.
They're just, Yeah, but they're also boring.
Yeah, it just does. Like, there's times actually where I've Gigantamax because I needed the health to fight a raid guy, and I'm like, I really wish I didn't have Gigantamax moves, like, or the Dynamax moves. I wish this was, like, what I have, because my moves are going to be better than what this is going to be offering me.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And every raid boils down to the sort of the same thing. It's like, okay, my Dynamax Pokemon with a super effective move will take off two shields, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's so boring after a while because they're all the same. There is no strategy other than just your standard strategy and also just hoping that people will join your raid, mm-hmm. because against the 5-star ones, it's almost impossible to win those on your own.
Yeah, so guys are not going to do you any favors.
Yeah, and then the matchmaking's fucked because like half the time it pops up on my feed, and join this, and it's like you can't join for arbitrary reason. Like fuck you. Yeah, so Switch.
I got two issues with the joining stuff. The first is the Switch and the Pokemon, or rather Pokemon Sword and Shield, need to give us an actual refresh button. Like, something that we can manually hit.
Oh my god, yes.
Because waiting for new things to show up is so obnoxious. Especially considering what's happening is, and I've done this too, so I'm guilty of this, but like, I never did it online. But like, what you can do, and why you are getting so many errors. The first reason is an honest reason. Sometimes they just fill up. If there's a Larvitar that's out there, the thing, that's probably going to get people to it so much faster than any of the other ones. So you just weren't quick enough, unfortunately. The problem is the game's very bad at conveying to you why you were kicked out or why you weren't able to join. The other reason is, so what people are doing is they're going around and they're hitting up holes. And if the Pokemon that they don't want is on that like hole, that little raid thing, they can go to the home menu on the Switch, go to the settings, and go and change the date, and the whole place refreshes. And so you back out of that raid thing, and then you'll have a whole new raid there. So the assholes are doing it on Pokemon that are obviously the popular ones. So, like, all of a sudden, here's Honedge or a Larvitar or something, and they're like, well, I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for Dreepy or something. And then they'll back out, and it's just like, could you not have done that on, like, a fucking, like, bird shit thing or whatever, like a Zaktu or whatever, the psychic bird thing. You know, something that no one's going to want to join immediately. Like, you have to find, like, that one trainer who loves that Pokemon, and he might not be online right now. But, like, they're doing it on the ones that everyone's been trying to get into, because they're looking for, like, a very, very specific one, and they just don't care what hole they use. So that's the reason that everyone's been being kicked out, is because they'll try to join, and then the people have already refreshed their wild area. It's a little obnoxious. But it would be fixed if we had a legitimate refresh button, or at least mitigated, so that, okay, well, I'll just refresh and see what else is out there.
Yeah, I have heard that this is happening. I'm just like, God. I'm just in this for the candy.
Now, I've been doing this on my Nuzlocke because I need to change the weather on certain areas because I know that certain Pokemon's going to show up there. And I'm like, I'm not interested in what's in this raid thing, but I need to use it because it's not thunderstorming outside, and I need an electric type. And so I'll end up switching around. But the great thing about this game and being on the Switch is that you can have multiple profiles on the Switch. So I have literally a profile that just says Nuzlocke, and that's the one that I use for like hard modes or whatever. And nice. So that one doesn't have any connection to the internet because I don't feel like paying for two Nintendo Switch online subscriptions.
Fair.
But yeah, you can still use the same trick to recycle the wild area. All right, cool. So those are some negatives on this game. I don't want to like trash on it. But like, it just, you know, there's
no, it's a good game.
It's a good game. It's extremely fun. It's great to be back in Pokemon again, and it's cool to see it with this amount of graphics pumped into it. I'm a little disappointed with some of the animations. It's never been a thing that I've been bothered by, but when they said that there was another reason why they said that they couldn't put all these Pokemon in because they were working on the animations, but then
animating 800 and whatever sprites was like too high a mountain to climb, which I guess makes sense, but there's no reason. They've also said that they're never going to do it, which I'm like,
you can't never say never.
Yeah, I was like, you're telling me that you can't include this as DLC at some point.
Right.
But then I'm also getting, I'm like, remember, they do a new one of these games like every 3 or 4 years. And so they're probably already in development for the next one. So that's probably why they're not going to do it, is because they're saying, well, why would we take resources away from the next game, which we have to put out in this time period, because it has to line up with the anime, and because the next anime will come out this time. Because that's the thing. Pokemon is a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
The Pokemon company does this.
Pokemon is like one of the golden gooses that Nintendo has. And it's hard to imagine that they cannot, like, I know I don't want to say throw money at the problem, but like, just like, they have so much in their pocket that they could use.
Well, yes, but there's no incentive for them to do so. I mean, Sword and Shield, to my knowledge, is the best selling game on the Switch to date. So everyone bought it regardless of the controversy. So there's no incentive for them to hire more designers.
The controversy that they have named Dexit.
Yeah. There is no purpose for them, or no reward monetarily for them to hire more people to design more sprites to include them in this game while they're developing for the next game, because everyone's already bought this game. So the only reason to do it would be creative integrity and a love for the fans, which this company is too big to care about those things.
Right.
Like, this is not Hello Games. They don't give a shit. They're like, all right, sweet. We sold a shit ton of Pokemon games. Let's start developing for the next one, because the anime is going to hit the next region in 4 years, and we need to have this game ready by then.
So, but if they were to include something like a Delta episode, like a DLC, sort of like Delta episode from Omega Ruby, where it's like another little add-on story-wise to add more to the incredibly missing lore in this region. And included in it was like, hey, we're also adding in 50 more Pokemon from the rest of the Pokedex or whatever, National Dex. And you're going to get the shops, the clothing shops, you're going to get more clothes. We got added some new styles. And, you know, that and we've improved. We're going to...
beauty
in this
pageants
patch,
or whatever that is.
Yeah, like beauty pageants, something in there for your Pokemon.
Fan favorites from the previous game.
And it's like, they sell that for like 20, 25 bucks on the Nintendo market. Like, I don't see why they couldn't do something like that.
They could. Remember, since they always do the third game, you know, the in-between game, mm-hmm. to sort of keep the Ultra Sun and Moon, as it were, to where they like add just enough to warrant it being another game. So I could see them including more Pokemon in something like that. Maybe. I don't know. I guess we'll find out like in a couple of years. Like, they do that, what, like a year or two later or something? Two years later?
Like that,
probably.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings on Ultra Sun and Moon. But like... I think that does remind me. One more thing of praise for this game. I don't feel like they held my hand. Like, it doesn't feel like they did not force me into tutorial after tutorial after tutorial.
Well, they asked.
They
like,
asked,
hey, do you
and
know
I got
how
to
do
say
that?
No.
Like, yes.
And they said, well, all right. And then we moved on with the rest of our lives. And it was so great.
Which was a welcome, a welcome thing. I was like, boy, it took them 8 games to get this right.
Like...
how to catch a Pokemon by now.
Well, they still did the catch Pokemon.
They still did that,
because of tradition, I guess. But, like, you know, Hop comes over and he asks, do you know about Pokemon jobs? And I'm like, you mean the thing I accidentally found out about on the PC? Yeah, I'm good. And he goes, well, all right, then you're probably an expert. I'm like, I am, Hop! So, it just feels nice to be like, there's so many negatives about this game sometimes in like, not respecting our intelligence, that it was nice to have this little moment of like, no, we do respect at least your time. So, yeah. All right, do you want to bring this back into the broad stroke of Pokemon again?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I'm going to link this in, but what do you think about our rivals in this game? Because, you know, we are focused on just the gym challenge, which means that really our big things are the story with our rivals. And in this game, it does another multi-rival thing.
I guess the norm now.
Well, yeah, it's odd because
it's been the norm for like 5 generations.
Yeah, so Ruby and Sapphire had Brendan and May, and then eventually Wally shows up. I think the fourth one goes back to just one. It's Barry. hated Barry. And then Black and White had three, and it was Sharon and Bianca, and then it was either, I think it was, no, it was Sharon and Bianca, that was the only two. And then in X, Y, and Z, you had like an entourage.
You had like five, yeah, which was the worst. I really enjoyed X and Y, but that was easily the worst part of that game.
It was so...
because it watered them down into like, oh, more is more. Archetypes. Like, Jesus Christ.
It turned them into weird archetypes. And then you had Selena / Calum, depending on what gender you picked. And then in Sun and Moon, you had Hao, and then eventually Gladion. And then that brings us to this one, with... Hop being the obvious like childhood rival again, but then you meet Beatty, who kind of pushes you around, who I still feel like is a girl.
Short tangent. The mandatory androgynous character in a Japanese RPG.
Could that have been the plot? Like, I just wish Beatty was trans. Like, because then at least I'd be like, no, guys, like, respect his choice. Like it's obviously a girl. But no, they like someone.
You honestly think that the Nintendo is going to include a trans character in their children's game? This is the same company what was that game where they wouldn't allow homosexual relationships I can't remember what the fucking game was.
Oh, you're right. Was it one of the main lines, or was it one of the other ones?
It was something licensed by Nintendo. It was... It was one of those...
Oh, Fire Emblem. It was Fire Emblem. It was Solel.
Was it Fire Emblem? No, yes. I think there was another one.
So, in Fire Emblem Fates, there's this character named Solel, and she is obviously a lesbian. Like, a raging lesbian. Like, to the point where she is, like, forcing her hit, like, herself on these women around her. And what... Oh, God, Ian, you are gonna, like weep because of this decision. In one of the support conversations, she's talking to someone, and I can't remember which one it is, but like she talks about how she just loves these women, like she can't help it. And this person says, well, that sounds like a malady, I have a potion for you, and like fixes her.
Oh my god. The game I'm thinking of, and it's funny that like we came up with different games, thank you Nintendo,
yeah,
is Tamagotchi Life. Came out in 2014, where the game encourages you to fill the game with copies of your real life friends and family, It wouldn't allow homosexual pairings between characters, which pretty much said that we don't acknowledge that those people exist in real life. So they got a huge amount of backlash for that, because Nintendo's just like, either meant A, that they didn't believe that homosexuals should exist in this game, or B, that gay people wouldn't want to play their game.
Listen, Ian, Japan has a population problem. And if they're not...
They're like, no! If they're stop not, it! Stop fucking this way!
If they're not breeding, babies. They're not helping! You can have your gay relationships with more populations back on track.
Oh my god. We've gotten off topic. Oh man, we've gotten off topic.
I apologize. Oh man, it has...
Rivals!
Yes. So, So, what's... Like, how do you feel about rivals in general, and then, like... How do you feel about our rivals in this game, I guess?
C plus, B minus?
for rivals in general or for this game?
No, for this game.
Okay,
So better than the cavalcade of fuck-ups that we got in X and Y.
For sure.
Worse than... I'm still a big proponent of your traditional rival, you know, you're Gary. Yeah. Maybe that's because you're the red to your blue or whatever. I guess that's because I've been playing these since I was a kid, and when we were kids, your rival was Gary Oak, and he was an asshole.
Yes.
However,
and then Silver, who was still an asshole.
Yes, exactly. Like, you have your one rival who wants to beat you and doesn't really show you much affection or anything, and it's not like a friendly rival. It's a, I'm the best, you suck, I'm going to beat you. Yeah. I'm like, okay. Like, I want to beat you because you're an asshole. Yeah. But... Pokemon games have long since gone away from that to be more, I guess, kid-friendly, where they're like, oh no, we're both going to push each other to succeed, which I'm like, So I get why you want children to have positive relationships with their friends, but I like a friendly rivalry where it's like, hey, you dingbat, I hate you. But I will say that sometimes when they stray away from it, they hit gold. I liked Wally. I don't know if a lot of people
did. I did too. I didn't like him the first time, but by the end of the game, I actually kind of came around to Wally.
Well, because he was kind of characterized, right? Like, he's the sickly kid.
Yeah.
Who his parents are super worried about him because of, like, oh, like, he's, you know, kind of weak and we're worried about him. Can you look after him? And then all of a sudden, his relationship with his Pokemon strengthens him, and all of a sudden, he pops up as this big, huge rival at the end of the game where I'm like, holy shit, Wally, like, you've been lifting, bro. Like, holy shit. Like, this little Ralts, which was like super easy to beat at the beginning of the game, all of a sudden it's Gardevoir, who's like level 60. I'm like, ah, shit. So I liked Wally. I liked what they did with him. I would say in general, Pokemon with rivals, I'd say that they probably get it wrong more often than they get it right. I think in this game, very popular is Marnie.
Yes.
I think, and rightfully so.
There is so much Marnie, like, artist things going on right now on Twitter. It's insane. Like, I can't keep up.
Marnie definitely stole the show. I really think a ton of people do. Marnie probably should have been the main rival. I don't like Hop.
Oh, God, yeah.
But not through any hot fault of hot. It's, I don't like insecure characters. Like, how can my rival is super insecure, which, realistic, yes.
I wish, like, they did more with it. Like, I wish they didn't, like, color it as him as, yeah, as it, like, he's in my category. I've made a chart for this that you can't see for podcast listeners, but for us, I made a chart that has our rival categories, and he's in my category of psyched about anything.
Yeah.
And I wish they didn't just, like, brush him into he's just so happy about everything. Like, I wish they actually addressed the fact that, you know, he's copying somebody else's dream. He doesn't really actually have any goals for himself. He's kind of, like, overcompensating, and he feels entitled because his brother is the champion. So he thinks that naturally he'll be the
fails.
Champion.
Yeah, but then he has, like, a crisis of conscience when he fails because he doesn't know
right. What
to do next. I think he's probably the most realistically characterized rival that they've ever had. The problem is that he's genuinely unlikable.
Yes.
for adults.
Do you like his hip thrust that he does? That...
Oh my fucking God. But yeah, that's the thing, is he's unlikable because most of us have at least I do, where I come across somebody who throws their insecurities on you.
Yeah.
Like, oh dude, like, come on. Like, it's very unattractive. And he's supposed to be your big rival. I think if they had switched Marnie and Hop, it would have been better. And then Bidet or whatever the fuck his name is.
Oh God. I think it's either Bead or Beady. I don't think Bidet is the intended pronunciation.
Is horribly underwritten. Like, why does he...
Yeah.
He has, like, three scenes in the entire thing.
It feels like we're missing scenes from him.
Yeah, like, it's like they cut scenes where I'm like, there was kind of promising. Where I'm like, oh man, he could be, like, a villain. And then all of a sudden he's like, he's an ass, then he does a bad thing, then he disappears,
the quote-unquote obvious villains hang him out to dry, basically. And I would have loved to have seen, like, a setup for that. Like, I would have loved to have seen... not like they don't need to beat me over the head with, like, oh yeah, we're gonna betray the crap out of this kid, we're just using him because he's a... no. I would have just loved just a little bit more of a built-in relationship of, like, seeing this rival with the Chairman Rose and his scummy assistant.
He's tremendously underwritten, which I felt was a shame because there was something there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like, do you agree that Pokemon rivals have kind of, I don't know, do you have the same thought process that liking them how they used to be, or do you like the direction they've gone?
Yeah, so it depends on how they do this, because so for those who can't see, I have Nemesis rivals, that's like Blue/Gary, Silver and all those guys, psyched about anything, so like that, your Howl and your Hop, or God, Ian, I don't know if you play Let's Go Pikachu, but they blasphemed the game, and they have a second rival named Trace, who's a little Okay, can I just say that the psyched about anything rivals are the kind of guys that are like, you're battling them, and it's like they come over behind you, rub your shoulders, and say, hey man, you're doing a great job, keep it up. And you're like, hey man, I'm trying to beat you, what are you doing to me? Like, leave, like, don't touch me. It's like, no, hey, it's cool, you're doing fine. Like, yeah, you know, like, hey, we're having a good time here. It's like, dude, I know, I was. Like, can you stop, like, trying to force this in? Yeah, and that's how I feel about Hop. Like, you hit him with a special effective move, he's like, ah! Like, leave it to my rival to figure out special effective moves. It's just like, Hop, man, come on. and then I have the last category is the backup protagonists. And these are the kind of characters that honestly probably could have held the game together on their own if, like, you weren't there as a rival. And that's where Marnie is, and that's where Wally is, and that's where, like, Hugh and Selena/Caleb are. So obviously the psyched about anything rivals I probably hate the most. I think Hal, like, both Hal and Hop are very, very similar characters, and they both have a crisis of conscience at the same point. My issue is that they don't really do much with it. Like, it's like with Hal in Sun and Moon, he gets this weird moment of like, basically he's told to keep Lily safe, and then, and his whole stance to this game is like, you know, I'm just battling for fun. Like, this is fun, guys. Aren't we having fun, Pokemon? And it's just like, dude, how? Like, can you take this seriously? At least a little bit? It's not fun beating you if you're not trying. Like, it just feels like his enthusiasm is disingenuous. If you're excited about everything, you're excited about nothing. But finally, Gladion beats the living crap out of Hal and steals Lily. And that's when all of a sudden he has to realize, hey, I should probably focus a little bit more on this stuff. And he's super depressed, but they kind of just, like, they just sort of have him get over it. And he doesn't really change afterwards. He kind of goes back to where he was, but, like, they bump his levels up a little bit more. So it's like, man, you guys are close here. And with Hop, they do the same thing, but they don't really address the fact that Hop is a bit of an asshole. Like, you get to the Pokemon Registry for the sponsorship or whatever, and he's like, I'm Hop, finger guns. Like, my brother's the champion. We've been endorsed. Can you put my name down? And the guy's like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And it's just like, dude, Hop, back the fuck off. like, chill, man. And the game just doesn't go into it. And I understand that these are fun little kids' games, but, like, as a child, like, I didn't mind Blue. I thought he was a fine rival. Like, I wanted to beat him, and I felt freaking challenged by him. And, like, while I appreciate being healed on Nuzlocke runs, there are times where, like, you know, the reason why Blue and Silver were so fucking scary sometimes was, like, I'm in the middle of, like, a cave, or, like, yeah, battling
your team is, like, limping along, yeah, and then all of a sudden your rival's waiting at the end. It's just like, oh, look at you with your injured Pokemon. Yep. Sucks to be you!
Yeah, smell you later!
And that's the thing, like, this game heals you so much. Oh, I'm just, man, like, why do I even need to go to a Pokemon Center? Oh my god! And in between, so, the thing that they replaced the Elite Four with, the Champions Cup, which at first I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's like a tournament. That's neat. But you can go to the Pokemon Center in between your matches. And I'm like, what the fuck? This is so easy.
Yeah, that's the... So, okay. Before I jump into that, like, I think I gravitate to the Nemesis rivals because of the fact that I feel challenged by them. Like, they hate my guts, I hate theirs. I want to not only beat them, but, like, move past them. Like, hey, I want you to know that I don't think anything of you, man. And, like, he's like, I'll see you in hell. But, like, here's the problem with Nemesis rivals. It's like, hey, Blue, do you notice where you're at right now? And it's like, yeah, the Silphco Company. Yeah, do you know what's going on? There's a bunch of guys wearing the letter R running around. That's weird, but, you know, let's battle. It's like, dude, read the room. Is this... Because could you not have...
There are more important things going on, Blue.
And then he's just like, all right, well, I lost. Peace out. And I was just like, Blue. So, like, that's the problem sometimes with them, is that it just seems like, similar to the Get Psyched guys, it seems like they're clueless about their environment. Whereas like Marnie or Selena or something, it's just they're honed in on what's happening at the same time, and they feel like they're actually contributing a little bit to the plot. Like with Marnie and her brother Piers, they're like basically rallying up and like being like, hey, we gotta storm this tower and get to the Rose, we'll help you. And like Marnie basically like whips her team Yell into shape to like add into this people. That's a smart thing. Hop didn't do anything. Like Hop kind of just like, if anything, Hop over escalated that situation and made it sound way worse than it really was. But like, yeah, it's, I kind of would like the backup protagonist characters. Like I like that. I like the Wally. I like seeing this growth from someone and having a little bit more contribution to the story, even if it means that they're not going to hate my guts. At least, like, when I first fought Marnie, it was that moment that only Dr. Venture and myself have had, when Dr. Venture has lost his kidneys. Huh, this is serious. And I almost lost to her because I didn't know what the hell her Pokemon were, and I knew that they were dark, and I didn't actually have an answer to dark Pokemon at that point in the game. And I did not know what I still don't know what Mopiku's power is. Like, when it shifts form?
Yeah, I could know look what that it up, means. But I can't be asked, so.
I've tried looking it up, and no one tells me. Like, there's nothing. It just says it shifts forms. And I'm like, what does it do then? Like, what does the black form, evil-looking version do that's different than the Pikachu-looking version? So, yeah, she throws curveballs at me, and I don't know how to deal with that sometimes. I would prefer them a little bit. Now, when it comes to that end of the game like thing, I kind of wish we were like forced into each one. And based on where you're at level wise, I don't see why that would be a problem. Like, you had so much freaking experience points and were so over leveled by this point in the game. Like, you could easily have done the entire tournament arc and then hit Leon and still come out with like barely a scratch on you because of how like. Like, your slowest guy would probably have been faster than their fastest guys. Yeah. Yeah. So that's my thought. That's my thought on Rivals.
Yeah. I think I pretty much agree. So, better than some, not the best.
That was very ranty, one. I apologize.
No, you're fine.
Okay, so, when Pokemon's, like, obviously, we've talked about Sword and Shield's, like, plot kind of been missing, or tacked onto at the end, but, like, clearly none of us come to Pokemon for the plot. It's not something that's, like, no one writes home about, like, hey, guys, check out this plot. I will say that Black and White had a very unique take, where it was, like, a very, like, Pokemon shouldn't be tools team Plasma, and then they blew up the Pokemon League, which was crazy. But, like, you most of the time you're not looking for that, but, like, do you want at least something? Like, some people have actually praised, like, if it's going to be a bad plot, they praised Sword and Shield for just getting it out of the way and not having it. Like, is that a better take than, like, say, what we got in, I don't know, the fourth gen, which I don't even remember, Team Galactica or Galactic or whatever.
I remember X and Y had a pretty good plot. Something about Pokemon.
No. Being, this, I think, this is a Pro ZD sketch if I've ever heard one, and I think he made it because of it. But it's the, this world is imperfect, and if only it could be as beautiful as me. And, like, God. The professor introduced you to this man. And he's like, oh yeah, Lysandroth, he just says these kind of things. It's kooky stuff. And like, anyway, this is Team Flair. And like, walks away. And they're like, professor, that was really scary stuff he was talking about. Why don't you say something?
I don't know. I'm a senile old man who gives a fuck.
If my professor was like, just keep moving, guys.
I approach the plot in Pokemon games the same way I approach the plot in B movies. It's there to be chuckled at and to enjoy in an ironic way. And if it's not there at all, then you're just sitting silently in a room for an hour and a half. So yes, I want my plot in my Pokemon games, if only for me to chuckle at. Okay. So is the plot for Sword and Shield good? No. Am I chuckling every so often when I see this character with hair that is sculpted in the shape of a sword?
Oh, man, does it not remind you of Taruki Hanazawa from Mob Psycho?
Oh my god, yes. That is the first thing I thought of, where I was like, wow, this has to be like a subtle nod, like a subtle reference.
Man, I hated it how much they didn't have this implemented, but I love these like Swordbert.
Swordbert and Shieldbert or something,
Swordard and Shieldbert.
Yeah. So I'm like, this is how you do a Pokemon plot.
Yes.
Because it is so over the top and it is so silly.
The way they laugh and their hair jiggles.
Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? It's like a B movie. It's like a bad B movie. I don't expect anything deep from my Pokemon plots. They've tried deep before. The problem is that they can't resolve it in a way that matters, because if the bad guys have reasonable arguments, then they can't resolve it in a way that is satisfying in game, because this is a game for children and they need the simple black and white. That's what Nintendo thinks. So I'm like, fine, if you're not going to address a serious Pokemon plot in the way that with nuance that it deserves, then just go full schlock.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing here. And I'm like, sweet, I'm in.
Yeah. So I love the little clip stuff. This legendary quest thing at the end of this game is probably one of my favorites. And I agree with you. Like, if they're not going to do a black and white kind of a storyline, if they're not going to do... I mean, think about it. The first game, Team Rocket, was barely a story in Red and Blue. It was just sort of like...
There were mobsters.
There were mobsters, and you didn't even like really know what they were doing, per se. They were just kind of blocking your way as you did your gym challenge.
Well, Giovanni was based off of the Italian mob,
yeah.
So he just wanted power. Like, it was super simple.
Yeah. And the only reason, I'm convinced the only reason the Pokemon trainer Red got involved was because they blocked up Sapphire's gym and you needed to get your badge.
Yeah, that's super it. Like, he would have totally ignored them, except they kept being in the way, and then Giovanni was the final gym leader.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I guess, like, oh shit, it's about that time again. Like, here we go again.
Yeah, so I mean, like, but that's the thing. That's bare minimum. That's like... That's not exactly something like we, like, if anything, their attempts at trying to make these ginormous plots, like, as much as I love Gen 3, Ruby and Sapphire, the idea of paving the entire world underground or flooding it is absolutely insane. Like, do you realize you live on this world?
it's so absurd.
It's so absurd. I actually like Gen 2. Having the reminiscence of Team Rocket trying to figure out what the hell they're supposed to do without Giovanni, I thought that was actually... I mean, it's still not a big plot. It's not huge. But, like, that was kind of cool. I enjoyed seeing, like, 5 years later what the hell they have to do now. But, like, yeah, if you're not going to... If it's, like... Because you're going to get, like, the Gen 3, you're going to get the Gen 4, and you're going to get Gen 6's insane over-the-topness. But, like... They're still trying to make it sound like they're deep for some reason. And if you fail, if you can't do that, like, it's very clear that they're just not capable of blending a deep storyline with kid-friendly. Like, they don't know what to do with it because they're afraid that if they go too deep, kids won't understand it, even though they're pretty smart. If that's the case, then yes, give me more Shieldbert.
I'm like, all right, yeah, like, forget it. Just do, if you're not going to do, because one of the... The beauties of, like, the Team Rocket era was just its simplicity. Yeah. But I'm like, all right, if you're not going to do something heady and you're not going to do something sort of simple like Team Rocket, then just go full schlock.
Yeah.
Like, super schlocky.
Just have fun with it at that point. Like, just, like
ham it up.
Yeah. If you know it's going to be goofy, lean into it. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like with Shieldbert and Sodard.
I'm like, the first time I saw them, I'm like, what the hell is this? And then now I'm like, sweet, I'm in.
So much better than Chairman Rose, who I didn't even... Oh, I still don't know what his goal was. Like, what is...
It's just like, well, it didn't make any sense, because I'm like, at first I'm like, okay, is this an environmental shtick? Which they've done before in Pokemon.
Yeah, that was basically Ruby and Sapphire.
Yeah, but then at the same time, it's an environmentalist shtick, but it comes from the wrong person, because this guy owns the power plants in this world.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you're the one ruining it, first of all. Second of all, like, he keeps emphasizing, oh, we're fucked 1,000 years from now. Like, wait a minute. Like, shouldn't it be like 100 years or 50 years from now? Like, because isn't that the whole environmentalist shtick now? Is like, if we don't reverse course sometime in the next 50 years, then it'll be gone too far, and the world will be damaged beyond repair.
Right.
But like, he's like, if we don't do something in 1,000 years, the world will be ruined. I'm like, wait, what? Like, okay, like, yes, that sucks, but I totally get Leon's point of view. It's like, it can wait until after the cup, because it's 1,000 years from now. It didn't make any sense.
It didn't make any sense. Like, his emphasis on time was so nuts.
He said it several times.
Yeah, and like, Leon, he basically convinced him by, like pestering, basically, and Leon's like, all right, I'll help you. But can it be after the tournament? Like, basically, he got, like, the most powerful trainer so far to agree to help him. And all he had to do was wait one day. Hell, yeah, probably not even a full day. He probably would have just whipped on over there so long as he could find his way there. Remember, guys, this game wants to remind you, Leon is not good at directions.
Oh, my God. And it just didn't make any sense. It's like, all right, I'm going to take this Pokemon, and I guess it'll create power for us, so instead of, I guess we'll leech off of the life force of a Pokemon to fuel our power.
What the hell was that end game?
Like, well, that's kind of cruel. And then I'm like, but like, we need the champion to catch it because no one else can. And like, so I'm going to awaken it and it'll destroy like a bunch of shit. Like, this seems very poorly thought out.
Like,
I guess so. That was his idea. Was to catch it and then siphon power off of it.
It reminds me of
power. I'm like,
it reminds me of another Venture Brothers reference, but it reminds me of Mr. Fantastic guy, Mr. Incredible, and
I know it's the parody of Fantastic Four parody,
he has his wife's brother, whose ability is not to flame on, but to literally burst into flames.
He literally is on fire and in pain.
And he has him inside of a generator as he spins
around.
He's
fueling the Mr. Impossible.
Mr. Impossible, that's it.
He's fueling the Impossible Tower. He's like a human reactor. He's running around inside this little hamster wheel.
That's basically Chairman Rose's plan, is to just siphon power from this legendary Dynamax Pokemon thing.
Oh my God, first of all, this is a horrible plan, but also, like, I don't understand the time thing. Why was it 1,000 years? Why couldn't they just say, like, oh my God, like, I've seen the numbers, like, we're almost past the brink of no return, we have to act now.
Yeah.
And, like, that would have made more sense, but he repeatedly said, 1,000 years, we are super fucked. I'm like, what?
Yep.
I don't know.
Maybe if it was too soon, we would be on the chairman's side, which would have been a very interesting take on the Pokemon. Very odd.
Did you also find that the chairman, the Rose Tower, was overly simplified? Like, I'm used to Silphco and like hideouts and stuff.
It was an elevator.
Where it's a puzzle and there's teleporters and stuff, and you have to like fight your way through the ton of trainers to get to the final boss. I'm like, oh my God, it's a 100-story tower.
And also, with Silco, you don't know if you're about to talk to a legitimate citizen who's being held hostage, who might give you an item, or a trainer, scientist that's turned traitor to Team Rocket.
But in this one, in Rose Tower, it was 100 stories with a huge-ass elevator where you could have Pokemon battles for some reason.
Yeah.
And then it stopped three times for battles, and that was it. There was no puzzles. There was no intricate level design. Like, it seemed streamlined down.
It was really weird. It felt like, so parts like that made me wonder, like, why they pushed this game out so quickly. Or if they did push it out quickly, why they didn't just hire more people to help design levels and trainers? Because they have the money to do this. I don't understand, like, how you all need to be on the same page for this specific part. Like, you could just have, hey, your job is to design the tower level, and your job is to fill it with trainers. Go.
There have been zero intricate level design. There have been zero intricate level designs in the game, which is weird. Because those are the one really intricate, long, protracted dungeon crawl It's like kind of a staple in Pokemon games.
Yeah, like you get into that cave that you can't see anything, or like you get into the hideout and you have to figure out XYB while also, like, what was great about some of the hideouts, like the game company one in the first game, is that you couldn't exactly get back to the Pokemon Center so easily because the floors were all moving you, and you had and you accidentally would keep hitting more trainers.
It would, yeah, exactly. Like if you decided to bail, if you didn't have an escape rope, then like you would have to essentially like try to get your way out, and then you'd have to go back in and like go through an intricate sort of like, it was like, oh my god, do I really want to bail? Because it's such a pain in the ass to get back to this point.
And while like, that's annoying, I appreciated it because, you know, you start to have to really focus in on which Pokemon you're going to be sending out now because some of the guys are just too damaged.
Yeah. Like, it was challenging. So, I don't know. Anyway, so that's plot.
Yeah. So, Ian, what about the actual Pokemon? Because, again, we're getting into, like, you know, they didn't add all the Pokemon into this, but, like, what would you say your favorite guy is? And when it comes to the designs of, like, these new ones, and or the newer ones, because you can include, to me, the entire XY games, the Sun and Moon, and then these are all feeling, they still feel like this is the new ones. Like, for some reason, after Black and White, it feels like Pokemon took a weird step up graphically, and as a result, we got a lot of weird designs that come in. So a lot of people have said they're lazy. Some say some of the designs are actually pretty cool. What would you say your favorite Mon is? And then what do you feel about some of these newer ones that have been showing up?
My favorite Pokemon of all time is definitely Dragonite. Always has been. Always will be.
Classic.
He's the class. He's the first pseudo legendary Dragon type.
Yep.
And he's I think he's perfect because he is both cute and menacing.
Yes.
Which is, he strikes that perfect balance because like a lot of times Pokemon, they're either cute designed or they're menacing designed. It's very rare that a Pokemon walks that balance of being both, but Dragonite kind of does it where I'm like, hey, like aren't you a good boy? But then at the same time, like in battle, I wouldn't want to see one across the way from me.
Right.
So, but like, he's just such a classic, a simple classic design that I thought was really well executed. And that's kind of all of traditional Pokemon is their designs are kind of strikingly simple. Mm-hmm. I feel like they've kind of gotten more complex since then, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, I'd say some of them are clever as far as the new Pokemon go. I'm not going to be one of those people that says, oh, like the designs are all terrible now. I think some of them are fine. I still think that they haven't really hit gold with their starters in the same way that they did in the first gen or even the second or third gen.
Yep.
For whatever reason. I think that Rillaboom is okay. Design-wise, I don't like the water one.
The water one's the weirdest. I like his first form, but then it just gets weird.
Yeah, and then Scorbunny's final form is okay.
Yeah.
So, but like, there's nothing. There's the originals are so iconic, and it's just hard to. I guess it's hard to come after that, but at the same time, I just feel like, you know, it's kind of like lightning in a bottle, and they haven't quite gotten it yet. I think also the original Pokemon, like the original 150, were modeled after animals. And since then, we've kind of gotten away from that, and they've gone a little more cutesy. Like, they've steered really into the cutesy with the starters, whereas like Charmander, Bulbasaur, and Squirtle, if you look at their original character designs, they're cute, but they're not quite as, their eyes aren't quite as anime stylized as they are now. Like if you take Scorbunny and compare it to Charmander, Charmander is cute, but he's a lizard. Like he's kind of modeled after like a lizard dinosaur thing.
Yep.
Scorbunny is like an overly stylized cute rabbit.
Yes.
Which I think, I don't know, maybe it's because the original designs were modeled more closely to animal designs that they are a little more grounded and maybe people like them more. Maybe people find them more relatable. I don't know. Or it could just be nostalgia. I don't hate the new designs. I think the new Pokemon, my favorite one has to be Dragapult.
Yes. Easily. Oh, easily mine too.
Easily. Just because I was like, it's so absurd.
It goes in with the whole Swordbird and Shieldbird thing. Like, if you're going to make a design comical, go all in.
And yeah, I'm like, oh my god. This is a Pokemon that literally launches its unevolved forms out of its head at like Mach 1 at its enemies, and these little Pokemon love it. They're like, they live to be launched at Mach 1 by their I'm like, what the fuck? Like, this is fantastic. Like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
I'm not saying that they die, but I am saying that they kind of explode, and I don't see them again.
Exactly. I'm like, do you? And then I'm like, I want to see the anime almost to see, like, do they reload themselves, or do they, or does it have like a reservoir of Dreepy inside of its body that it just pulls upon?
I mean,
are they its unborn children? Do they get born into its head, and that's where they, the first thing they see is when they get launched at Mach 1 at their enemies?
It's so weird because, like, they are technically dead because they're ghost and dragon, which is a weird, awesome type combination that
Oh my god, what if they're dead Dreepy?
They are dead Dreepy.
What if Dreepy die, and then what if Dreepy dies, and then their afterlife is launched out of out of Dragapult's skull?
One of the things I love about it is it kind of has a throwback to that Super Mario character that would launch its unborn eggs at you or whatever at the top. I don't remember what it was called, but like in those levels you face that dinosaur thing and it shoots these eggs.
Are you talking about Yoshi?
I don't know if that was Yoshi or not. I thought they called it something else, but
I know Yoshi ate its enemies and pooped out eggs.
Mario's a very trippy game. But that's what this reminded me of. And just as ridiculously, I just love it. I just love it to death.
So, I don't know. I don't hate the new design. What do you think?
So I'll start. My favorite Pokemon is Tyranitar. For a while, I used to be one of those Pikachu fanboys in the early things. Kind of got off of it. I got kind of burned out by the amount of Pikachu love that's out there, and I think everyone kind of. I don't know if there's anyone who really loves Pikachu as their number one. I don't think there's anyone who hates it, but I think it's just, you know, kind of tired of him. So I was looking for something, and I got really into like raising dragon teams. And in the second gen, I remember seeing Tyranitar and being like, "Whoa, a T-Rex! Like, you don't get those that often. That's kind of cool." And I ended up raising it, and despite the fact that it has, I think, tied for second most weaknesses in the game to Abomasnow, I love the guy to death. He summons a sandstorm, he looks like a T-Rex, and he's been like a staple of my team since then. Involving with the new Pokemon designs, it's odd because, like, I still don't know what fucking coughing is. Like, I see him and wheezing, and I'm like, what the... Are these tumors? Like, what are like testicles or something? Like, what is this?
Jesus.
And so, like, yes, you'll get something like, oh, it's a trash bag. It's an ice cream cone. I'm like, yeah, but at least I know what that is. I mean, yes, you could say it's lazy design. But to be fair, it was sort of inevitable that we'd get a poison type Pokemon that was a bag of trash. Like, I'm surprised we haven't gotten a dumpster Pokemon yet. Fire and it's a dumpster fire Pokemon.
Yeah. I think a lot of nostalgia can be credited for the originals. Cause like, look at Voltorb and Electrode. Like,
yes,
they're Pokeballs.
Pokeballs. Yeah.
That's it.
I think also maybe it's me just not knowing Japanese lore a lot, because like I think that there's some like legend stuff involved, like mystical things. Like there's a reason why some of the Pokemon that are legendaries that are legendary. Like you've got Moltres who's and Ho-Oh who are obviously Phoenix references. You've got Pokemon that are based on dragons throughout mythical lore. I think Tangela's based on something, and I'm not sure what that is, but I think that there's some legend about that. At least I feel like I heard something like that, but like stuff like that just some of it might just go over my head and I just don't know what coughing is, because maybe it's something that somebody else would know immediately over in Japan, or maybe someone who knows classical studies better than me.
I will say that I think that I think not that the Pokemon designs aren't necessarily worse, I will say that I believe that they haven't done justice to legendary Pokemon since the early gens.
I agree, yeah.
I think that some of the designs for legendaries nowadays are way too complex.
Or just like they I remember Gen 4, they had a bunch of like basically Mew clones. They all looked like the same, and then they had in Gen 6 we had the deer and whatever that Y-shaped thing was. And
yeah, and like I didn't like particularly like the ones in black and white.
They were okay, but not like, I don't know, they just weren't amazing. They weren't distinct, they're very forgettable to me. Like I remember Groudon because and Kyogre because of how menacingly how much they affected the environment itself. It was such a cool thing. Whereas like in black and white, it just didn't feel like that. And then in this one, you have a dog holding a sword, and it was just like, you're sword-themed. Congrats.
Yeah, the first Pokemon to use, like, weapons, like, actual weapons.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
What does that mean for Pokemon evolution? They're able to use weapons now.
And tools. I like, of course, the originals, but I also felt like the legendary dogs were well designed.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool concept too, of them roaming. Like,
yes, that was a great mechanic for cat, because they would retain the same health and status conditions as they went from place to place.
Yeah,
I thought that was really rewarding when you finally caught them.
Yep.
And then I feel like Kyogre and Groudon were the last ones that I really remember with a lot of revenants. Mm-hmm. After that, I felt like it was a lot of samey stuff.
I actually even liked the Gen 4 Thundurus and the ones that like affected the weather, and you knew they were in the route because all of a sudden like a torrential like thunderstorm was happening.
See, I have very little memory of them.
I do too. Gen 4, which is hilarious because I distinctly remember us playing the living crap out of that game in college, like doing all sorts of stuff, and that's the game I remember the least. but I thought that mechanic, it was similar to the dogs, but it added like a cool weather component into it, changed the scenery a little bit. And I thought that was a cool little, like, you know, a new twist on a classic. I feel like also like the legendaries, it's odd to talk about this, especially with the plot, because in the first game, my reference is that they had no story and they were extremely detached from the game, and you just wandered into a power plant and there's Zapdos chilling there. And no one said anything about this. There's no warning or hype or anything. It was just like, this is a really weird bird. I'm going to catch it, I guess. back when you threw Pokeballs, you could miss. With the legendary designs, it's just, some of them are fine, but yeah, it just doesn't feel like they're as a big of a like impact in terms of.
Well, it could also be because it's just watered down. Like, we're eight generations in now. When we're only first and second gen in, like, each of them had a purpose, right? Each, like, Moltres, Zapdos, and Articuno had their areas of control. Like, Mew was this mystical ancient Pokemon, like, that was supposedly the progenitor of all Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And then, like, even with the dogs and stuff, like, and Lugia and Ho-Oh, they all had their niche, their designed role. And then as you get more and more and more, it's like, well, fuck, like, there's so many legendary Pokemon that it diminishes all of those that came before and all of those that come after, I feel like. So I actually don't mind what they've done with these ones because they're more small scale.
Yes.
I felt like Arceus was kind of...
Oh God, that was too far. They went way too far.
It's like, Arceus. Oh, it's the creator of the universe, God! And I'm like, oh, God, like, this is... It's too much.
It's like, oh, it's God? Yeah, he's in my great ball.
Like, yeah, like, I don't like that. Like, Mew was great because it was mysterious, and it was like, oh, it might be the progenitor of all Pokemon, but also it might not exist. It's kind of
and it might be underneath some guy's truck. You gotta use strength on it.
I liked that, but then when you take a Pokemon and you say, this Pokemon is God, like, well, fuck. All right. Like, how? Like, I'm going to catch it, and that seems weird.
What about Deoxys, the alien kind of a thing?
I don't mind that. I thought that was kind of a cool idea.
I thought so, too, because it was a throwback to when they were, like, rumored that Pokemon might have come from space, like, with Clefairy and Clefable and Mount Moon's little, like, the conversations you'd hear.
Those were good designs, too. Clefairy and Clefable, that whole lore behind that.
That was cool. I thought that when Deoxys came... Like, I'm glad that they finally officially released Deoxys, where, like, you could catch him in Omega Sapphire, or Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, because, like, it does get a little tiresome when they have these Pokemon locked behind mystery gifts, but, like, I thought it was cool that it's this alien form, and you're like, well, wait, is that stuff about Clefairy and all the other Pokemon? Does it actually hold some water? Like, holy crap, what? And I thought that was a cool, and I like the idea that you could change the form of him into, like, neutral or defensive and attack. I was big. I thought the Deoxys was kind of a cool design. I can remember him later on. Like, I thought it was a cool staple. But
yep.
So that's pretty much I will say that I wish that they would do things more like what they did in Black and White with Victini. Again, another thing that's hidden behind Mystery Gift that's no longer available because they don't know how to do DLC. They had this, like, island you could get a ticket for, and you'd go, and there's, like, this tower that's under siege, like, legitimately under siege by Team Plasma, and you would go in, and you had to defeat the Team Plasma guys, and there's Victini inside this tower's basement, watching TV. and it's, like, level 15, which is perfect, because that's where all your guys are, so that means, like, if you catch this guy... You're, like, two gyms in, or maybe one gym in or something, and now you can add him to your team and not have to worry about, like, breaking the game, even though it is technically a legendary or a pseudo-legendary in the fact that it's same stats as Mew. I thought that was... I wish they would do more things like that. They just pepper that in. I don't really think a lot of them are super lazy. I don't really hate the designs. I'm not going to be that boomer kind of a personality where, like, you know, I hate, like, oh, back in my day. It's like, back in my day, I don't even know what coughing is. Like, they made a Pokeball into a Pokemon. Like, don't give me this shit. it's fine. I think that some of the designs, if anything, I kind of wish that they made more Pokemon that had, like, less junk stats. Like, I wish that there was more, like guys I wouldn't immediately, like, say, wow, this guy has, like, no defenses at all, he's just about to get wrecked. I kind of wish, like, maybe moves were better, like, added in or something. Sometimes it feels like a snow cone just can't use a whole lot of moves because it doesn't have arms or legs, and that means that, like, all this stuff, like, that's the only thing I really, in terms of the design, I wish that they would think about when they're designing them. But no, other than that, I don't mind them. It's fine. Last one, Ian. What is your favorite Pokemon game of all the ones that you've played? Like, if you had to nail down which one that either from nostalgia fondness or just by mechanics or even the story, what one do you like the most? And why would you say that one is the one that you would kind of prop up as, like, if you, like, you could use any reasoning for this, but, like, if you had to say, hey, if someone should play a game, they should play this one. I know that's not gonna work either, because then there's a couple games that wouldn't work.
What's your favorite? I would say it's a tie between Gen 2 Gold Silver, which is classic, because of the you reveal that, like, the final boss is you from the previous game.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Which
that
was a great moment. I thought that was epic. Like, yep. I thought that was so good. And then also, like, after you beat the original 8 gyms, after you beat the 8 gyms and everything, it's like, oh, we have this entire second region for you to do. Like,
yes, that was such a... Yeah, okay.
That was fantastic. I really loved that. So those and the remakes of them, like Heart Gold, Soul Silver, I felt were also good. But I would say it's a tie between Gold, Silver, and X and Y.
Oh.
So the thing is, I have to go based on, like, X and Y, I feel like I probably have the most hours logged into. as a game.
Okay.
And it's kind of weird. I'm not really sure why. I think that the thing is that X and Y, it kind of introduced a lot of really interesting other mechanics in the Pokemon games, and like a lot of advances in gameplay. It was the first game with fairy type,
yep,
which I thought was a really good addition.
It was much needed. Although the dark, the strength against dark Pokemon, you didn't need to do dark type like that. Like, it has enough problems.
But Mega Evolution was the first one in there. Yep. That was the first time with Mega Evolution. I felt like there was a lot. There was, I believe, it was the one that did super training as well.
Yes, for Pokemon EV training. Oh yes, that cut straight through. I didn't have to go through wild. Yeah, no.
Yeah, which was a huge quality of life improvement for EV training. So just in general, I thought that it was X and Y was probably the biggest step up gameplay wise from a previous generation where they included a lot of new things.
Yeah.
I put a lot of time into that game. I'm not saying that it's the best. Team Flare was kind of ridiculous.
Do you guys like coffee? Yeah.
But it was, I felt gameplay-wise, it was really well done.
Yeah, I thought that as much as some people call Mega Evolutions gimmicks, I feel like they only do that now because Z moves became a thing, and they definitely were gimmicks. I always thought Mega Evolutions were cool because if Tyranitar, for instance, came out, is it going to Mega Evolve? Or is it wearing an assault vest? Or is it about to set up something like the stone move that Stealth Rocks? You didn't know. And I thought that the Mega Evolution, the fear of what is it holding, it was a cool little strategy twist into the game that didn't feel that gimmicky. It felt legitimate. Z moves felt gimmicky. They felt well, I'm gonna fire off this big shot and good luck. And then that was just one and done. Whereas until you're fainted, the Pokemon's Mega Evolved and the moves are all the same. They didn't change anything. So your strategy is hey, I'm about to beat the living hell out of you, but you'll have to figure out which one of my guys are going to do it. My favorite is definitely Gen 2. It's the whole aesthetic of it. This sort of old feel of legend wrapped into the game that, when I first played it, it was as a child or whatever, I put a lot of hours into Pokemon Red and a little bit into Pokemon Yellow. And so playing Silver and then eventually Crystal, that it was this weird feeling of man, if I didn't know better as a kid, I would have thought that it came before Red and Blue. That's how much the old feeling of it was embedded into this region of Johto. And going through it and uncovering, you had the unknown weirdness that was going on, that actually probably is untapped potential for more stuff in that game, but whatever.
It had a really strong, Japanese feel to it.
Oh, yeah, the aesthetics of the buildings and everything.
World Japanese.
Yep, and I love that so much, which as a kid, I didn't know that that's what I was liking, but I liked it nonetheless. The fact that, and we talked about it already, but, Team Rocket being back, but without Giovanni and not knowing what to do, I thought that was really cool because it's oh man, I remember these guys. And then going to Kanto and seeing how Kanto has changed since Red and Blue. I got into a fight with someone online about this because I didn't like Black and White 2 that much, and I thought there was a crappy sequel, and I said that Gold and Silver was a better sequel to Red and Blue, and this guy got anime glasses, that wasn't a sequel, that was its own thing. Black and White 2 were actually a sequel to it. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Of course Gold and Silver was a sequel. The whole Team Rocket arc was a sequel. Going to Kanto and seeing, all the stuff that you had done, kind of out of your way now, trees had been cut down now because you'd cut them back as a trainer and stuff. Misty is on a date because she's old enough to start dating now. And there's a Team Rocket guy who doesn't know where his buddies are because he's disconnected. And yeah, and then Red is just silently in a cave for no reason other than to train, I guess. And he's got all the Pokemon that you were either you found along the way, an Eevee or something, You picked up a Snorlax, because of course you had to fight a Snorlax sometime in that game. You had all three starters of the Pikachu. It was a cool little, like, thing in there that, that they, like, little nods backwards that were, like, you know, you could say they're references, but they're not, because they're evolved versions of what it was. So it's like, well, okay, we want to include a cameo of Red. How do we do this? It's like, well, we gotta make everything a little bit stronger and badass. Like, okay, we want to include something about this. We gotta make a rep, like, but they include, like, obviously you gotta increase 5 years later. And I thought that was so cool that you had, like, basically beaten the Elite Four, and then you still could keep playing with more gyms, and then continue on. I don't know. Man, it was so cool. I thought that was the best. And that, and when Heart Gold and Soul Silver came out, I still felt it. I still thought that was the one of the coolest things that they had done. So, yeah. Gen 2 is, takes it away from me. A close second.
No arguments from me.
A close second would be Gen 5. I really came around to Black and White, but no, I, Gen 2. Ooh. And Silver is a classic rival. He's an asshole who stole, who burglarized the professor's home. Like, actually committed a crime. Like, you could talk about Team Rocket, like, just being, like, assholes and blocking things and stuff and trying to steal Pokemon. This guy, like, breaking and entering and theft. Possibly a threat to the professor's life. Yeah, so. Alright, Ian. I think that's about it. Ending on a positive note, I would say.
Yeah, I think that was a really great discussion.
You know what? This is, I don't know how far we can get in this, but because we've kind of done a little bit, but, like, where would you like to see Pokemon move next? Like, what's the next forward for you? And I'm not talking about, like, Gigantamax, but, like, what would you like to see out of a new game? Like, if it comes to the Switch, what would you want to see from the next game?
I think that's, There are a lot of good bugs in the current game that haven't been fully fleshed out yet, like the raids. I would like to see, I think, the reintroduction of Mega Evolution, or just, like, discarding Dynamaxing outside of a raid environment, mm-hmm. and just focusing on making the raids better. I think the raid functionality could be better. I think at some point, adding the other Pokemon in would be nice. I think that having event-based, like, these, the raids and stuff in this game are kind of begging for events.
Yes.
And
kind of like what Pokemon Go does.
Exactly. I think the wild area in general seems like it's just begging for MMO-style events.
Yep.
And, like, scheduled events or things like that. Like, oh man, this legendary Pokemon, or even just these Pokemon from previous games that we didn't include in the game from the start, are appearing in the wild area.
Yeah.
And, like, you can catch them, or you can, like, join up and fight a raid and catch these Pokemon. Like, I think that would be a huge hit for sustaining longevity of play from here through the rest of the gap between this and the next gen. So I'm not suggesting any huge gameplay changes. Mostly, I'm suggesting, first of all, for the next gen, yeah, adaptive leveling is probably a good idea.
It's gotta have it. At this point, like, we, like, especially in this, and I love what this game does, because it feels like World of Warcraft's Legion. And I know you never played that, but, like, basically in this expansion pack, you could do anything you wanted to do. If you wanted to fish, go fish. But, like, what it would have is you could get a chance to roll on the same legendary item table that everyone else was on for the loot stuff. You would still earn points for your legendary weapon to get experience in it. You would still get some experience. And that's what this Pokemon game has done. It's like, anything you do is contributing to your Pokemon's team. And, like, the camping, for instance. You go camping, you make curry. Not only does it heal your Pokemon up, everyone gets, like, experience points. And I thought that was brilliant. The problem is the rest of the game has not adapted to that, and, like, you need to be able to at least, like, consider the fact that because you're giving us all this experience points, everyone needs to be adaptive level, where, like, it doesn't have to be the whole game. If you just want to do the rivals and the gyms and the Pokemon League, I'd be utterly happy with that. Like, all of a sudden, like, oh, man, these guys, I actually have to think, like, how I'm going to approach this gym, even if it is stacking one type, like, that you need to make sure you have a decent amount of those to, like, fight these guys. So
yeah, so, but yeah, that's pretty much what I'd You know, I don't think it's anything too ambitious. I just think it's things that they've adapted in other games that work well and that seem to be perfect fits for this. So
I agree. I still want to pound the table, and this is the ambitious one, is I kind of wish they would roll in all the spin-off games into this. So, like, Pokemon Ranger, Pokemon Colosseum, Detective Pikachu, Pokemon Snap. Just have, like, these, like, weird games that never felt to me like they were full games, even though they were sold and charged the same. but, like, if you were to look at, like, a Final Fantasy or, like, a Dragon Age game or some, like, you know, the traditional RPGs where you just have, like, a lot of weird side stuff that you could get lost on, Elder Scrolls, for instance, and that that don't add to the game's main plot, but, like, are there for you to just keep doing more stuff and spending time in your Pokemon game and enjoying your Pokemon. I think that would have been really cool to wrap up in there. As just to fill the world in, more stuff to fill the world in, that doesn't replace the gyms and ability to catch Pokemon, but like just is an addition to it. I thought that would have been, especially now that we're on the main console, we have more power, more space, more memory, everything you could want. You're just gonna have to hire more people to put these in or something. Like, that's what I would like to see. And I would like to see the whole game be like the wild area. I would rather it be 90% wild area. Maybe not like this. I mean, you could make it, if you want to make routes still individual where like the screen, like, and then you go into a new screen, fine. I just want that new screen to still feel like it's a wild area where I can turn the camera. Just, or better yet, you can have these narrow corridor routes, but let me turn the camera. Like, if you just let me turn the camera, I think I'd be pretty much okay with whatever you want to do. You know, baby steps here. And I would like to see us completely get rid of Mystery Gift, just kill it, and then have DLCs. Even if it's just free DLC, and it's just, like, silly little things like, get your Gigantamax Meowth, which is the scariest looking thing I've ever seen. It's like this poor Meowth's spine has been stretched.
Oh my god.
And, but like, yeah, just get, I just want us to, like, I want Pokemon and Nintendo for that matter, but mostly Pokemon, to join us in the 2020s, where everyone else has been doing this for years, and I would like them to just, like, you know, use the resources that are available to them.
I agree.
Cool. Yeah, so cool. All right, Ian. I think that's going to do it for us with Pokemon. Still really enjoying this. Would you want to do the tournaments that they're advertising? Like, they're doing some online tournaments. Would you ever be interested?
Oh, are they? I haven't even heard about that.
Yeah, I saw some stuff on the Nintendo, like, news e-store thing on the Switch. I don't know. I don't remember what the date is that they're doing it, but would you ever see yourself doing that?
Yeah, sure. I'd probably scrub out super hard because it's going to be full of a bunch of tryhards who have, like, max EV leveled their perfect natured Pokemon to, like, the perfect team. And I'm just over here, like, I mean, I try when I can.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I'll do EV and IV, like, grinding if it's for my, like, a couple of my favorites. But it's hard for me to get motivated to build an entire team and then try to do the EV/IV only to find out that my team doesn't work well.
Yeah, it's hard to find the time. My brother is 2 Pokemon away from finishing his Pokedex.
For this, like, game?
For this game.
Holy crap! Like,
and I'm like, Jesus Christ, do you do anything else?
Nope.
Like, now he has like 80 hours of game time, but even so, I'm like, Jesus!
That's still pretty impressive.
Yeah. So,
what, did anyway. He get Sword?
No, he also got Shield.
Hey, welcome Shield, brethren.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Well, cool. Good talk.
Yeah, I think I might try it too. I don't know. I probably also get washed out. Even though I do tend to go into it probably this more than you do, I think I'll probably also lose at the same round because I still don't go all the way into it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'll try it out. But then, like, I will certainly get knocked out by some tryhards.
Oh, man. Here, I'm going to end on a super positive note here. So Christmas is obviously coming up. Do you know what some of the people on the Reddit community are planning for coming Christmas?
No.
All right, so they've been sharing their PC boxes filled with, like, either Dreepies, Larvitar, Charmanders, whatever. And the plan is that a bunch of these people on Christmas Day are going to hit the Wonder Trade with these five maxed IV Pokemon to try to get the kids who are like just getting their Pokemon for Christmas or whatever and are hopping on for the first time. So the idea that they're actually going to have good Wonder Trade stuff out there.
I mean, I already Wonder Trade all of my like breeding rejects.
So do I.
And like, I just like...
At least those are
there. Someone out there will appreciate that.
Yeah, because to me, like even if I was just a kid, like obviously I would appreciate the IVs a lot. But as someone who also plays this, like when you go through this Wonder Trade or looking around for like, give me that goddamn Larvitar. Like I know that I could just breed them myself. I just need one of them. And the idea that like someone's gonna like people are gonna do that for like. You know, the kids who are getting their Pokemon for the first day on Christmas or whatever. That's super cool and awesome. And finally, maybe Wonder Trade will have a bunch of sucks stuff in it.
How wholesome.
Yeah. So
maybe I'll breed a bunch of Ditto and just make it rain Ditto.
Oh, man. Yeah, Christmas. I don't think anyone's doing Ditto yet.
I mean, I have two Ditto, so maybe I'll just like breed like a box full of Ditto and just be like, yeah, I'm giving out... Fuck boys! Merry Christmas!
I just wanted like not to go in this direction, but like I understand the idea. Like at least I can imagine the idea of how a Ditto breeds with something else.
I'm gonna nickname all of my Ditto that I breed. What is the Thought?
Oh God! What is like and when two Ditto's breed? Thought. What does that look like? What? Mushy stuff. It's like Play-Doh. It's
mushy, yeah. I don't know. That's
and together we make disturbing. More Play-Doh.
Oh my god.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I think I'm going to do the same thing, but maybe for like Dreepies or something.
Nice.
Cool.
That was very wholesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I saw that just the other day and I was like, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Now, what's going to be hilarious is we're all going to do it. The kids are going to have a membership to the Nintendo Switch Online, and all of us are going to just get each other's like Wonder Trades things. But yeah, we'll have tried. All right, Ian. All right. I think now That's going to do it. Unless you've got anything else you want to add about Pokemon or Pokemon.
Nope. Sword it was too. A great discussion. Merry Christmas or Happy Hanukkah, or
All Life the Day,
or Merry Happy Festivus, whatever holiday you celebrate. Enjoy it with your family. Happy Star Wars Day. May the Force be with you.
Oh man, doubly for me too. Festivus. For the rest of us.
Festivus for the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. All right, so, from all here at League of Mediocre Gentlemen, I want to wish you all a fine rest of your week, a happy holidays as well, Merry Christmas, and all that other list that Ian has given us. It was double for me again. but thank you all for listening, and Ian, thanks again for joining me.
Of course, always a pleasure. And if any of you are anime fans, our year-end is... coming up soon.
You cut out there for a little bit there. Sorry, Ian. Say it again.
Oh, for any anime fans out there, stay tuned because our year-end anime episode spectacular is coming up soon.
Yes, we're going to lump in our fall with it a little bit because a lot of fall that we're probably going to talk about are stuff that have been continued anyway, and they're just going to be part of the greater whole. And so anything that we don't talk about the fall is probably going to be like, hey, it didn't make our list for what should be in the award discussion. So stay tuned for that. We're going to have to figure out a time to chisel that out. There's still some animes that I want to finish up.
Probably around New Year's, I'd say.
Yeah, that seems like a good time, I think. So in like a couple weeks. But for anyone who wants to email us and talk about Pokemon and the like, our email address is leagueofmediocregentlemen@otnmedia.org. You can also find us on Twitter at the LOMG podcast. There's a Discord link in the description below for all the podcast episodes, so you can join that, and that's our Discord for our parent company, OTN. A lot of esports stuff in there, along with just talk about games and stuff, so if you ever want to join the conversation, go for it. Twitch streams every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 p.m. Monday at 8:15 is the podcast Level Up with John and Joey, so you can kind of tune in to watch them live and comment along the way. They always get a kick out of that stuff. So anyway, thanks again for joining me, and for the rest, for all of you out there, have at least a mediocre rest of your day. Thank you, and goodbye.